Welcome to Crosstalk Podcast.
Each episode, we do a deep dive into the experiences and stories of people who have walked the walk of recovery or, you know, the therapists and professionals who are working in the recovery community. Our mission is simple, is to help to navigate the challenges of a life free from substances and celebrate the victories of your personal journey to a better life. So buckle up and let's hit the road as we embark on this transformative journey together. So this is Crosstalk Podcasts. Welcome to Crosstalk. Today I have asked Caitlin, and my name is Irene, if you don't know already. I'm coming to you from South Florida, and I've asked a friend, Caitlin, here today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us about Caitlin.
All right, so I guess I'll start at the beginning.
Yeah.
So I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. You hear it like a lot in meetings, but I was definitely one of those typical kids. My dad used to say, Kate was born sensitive. So I came out of the womb, I think, having that like restlessness, that discontent that we talk about in recovery. To me, it was always kind of pegged as sensitive. It was funny because I kind of like bucked against the sensitive thing where it was like, no, I'm not sensitive. I'm tough. I'm this, I'm that. But deep down, I was very sensitive. I grew up in that typical home. My dad is an alcoholic, but it's never been identified. He doesn't identify that way today, even though it's pretty much late stage at this point. But we're that typical family of he was an alcoholic. My mom was an enabler. My sister, who's older than me, was the hero, the high achiever. She's great, but she's like, she's strong as shit. She's a neuroscientist. She's a mom of two. Like she does it all, and she looks great doing it. She's just a high functioner. And then there was me. I was the black sheep. I was the scapegoat. I was the identified problem. So, and that again, from a young age looked like I'm too sensitive. I'm too anxious. But so I'd say starting super young, like third grade, I had facial tics. I had nausea. I had all these physical manifestations of anxiety. And the narrative of our household was that like, everything's fine. There's just something wrong with you. And I believed that until well into like my recovery and like learning about family systems. And, you know, that's what I was told. And I really internalized that like I just had a problem. I was too sensitive. Everybody else could deal better than me. And then it turns out that wasn't reality. I'm just the, you know, anytime you're in like a system, there's always the one person who's going to like show up as the patient and have all the emotion and have all the problems. But it's part of a larger picture. Totally. So not like to place blame, because I also know my parents like did and do the absolute best they could. What they came from was a million times, if you want to like put a judgment on it, worse than what I grew up in. So it's like they absolutely were doing the best. So that's not to say like, oh, they're just this. And no,
of course,
none of that. But I started medicating, not like with drugs and alcohol, from the time I was like 8 or 9. Like if I had stomach upset, I remember I would go like drink Imodium every day. So like super weird stuff like that. Like I was always just trying to control my body. And I'm still to this day like very somatic. Like I feel everything. Like
but it's real.
But like I'm a feeling person.
Yeah.
So I would do weird stuff like that from a young age and always hiding it too. Like never, I guess, and that's just shame. Like that was me knowing I was doing something that was weird, not knowing why I was doing it. And again, like back to the environment I was in, both my parents were medical, and it was that very, tides are turning a little bit in like the US about how we approach healthcare. So I remember my first drink was kind of uneventful. I think we stole Jack Daniels. It was some kind of dark liquor, and we mixed it with Mountain Dew because were rednecks, and it was disgusting. And I remember my friend I was with got hammered, and I didn't. Like, I got tipsy, but, and that was also for some reason indicative of my metabolism. I don't know. I always felt through my whole journey, I could take in enough substances that should put down an elephant. And right. I just like can keep going. And I don't know what that is about me. So like that was kind of uneventful. I liked it, but I didn't love it. And then I remember more vividly, I got into my parents' medicine cabinet shortly thereafter, and they had hydrocodone. And it wasn't a super strong amount, but I remember I did it, and like that ease and comfort that the big book talks about, it was like, oh, this is great. Like, this right. is awesome. And I also started using that day the way I always use. I'm a self-medicator. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to be a weekend warrior who holds it together through the week. Like, I want to just feel good all the time. And that's going to create problems because of tolerance and the yeah. progression and like just trying to manage that feeling good. You know, you're going to have up.
How old were you when this, when did you say, and I missed.
How old are you when you're like in sixth or seventh grade?
I think that's like 12. Yeah. Like 11,
wow,
12.
That sounds young. So yeah. So it's 12 then. From that day on, it was like, I love the anticipation of like getting a feeling, whether it's like good or bad, but just like that waiting to like, just, you know, and release. I think it, yeah. And I think it comes down to exactly, it's something to focus on that wasn't my anxiety and my experience. But from the time I started using, I had a quick descent. Right. I was an IV drug user by the time I was 15. That was okay. my first detox because that was unsustainable. Mm-hmm. I was unable to complete high school. I think I dropped out when I was 16.
Okay.
Went and like, I'll spare you the gory details, but it's like, it's everything you would imagine. Like, my every day, and my parents were really like laissez-faire because I felt like I just kind of left that. I was living on my own by the time I was 16. They helped me get like a $400 a month apartment, and it was just a disaster. I worked in restaurants, but all day, every day, it was just, I have to support this habit that I have because I'm dependent on it, and the grind and the hustle of that. I've done.
And that was IV drugs.
Yes. Yeah.
So opiates. You had graduated from.
I graduated quickly. Yeah. I used to hear sometimes, I think it was like first time I went to treatment, they're like, no one sets out to be a drug addict. And I would think in my head, like, no, I actually was fucking all in. The second right. I realized this was a thing, I was like, let me commit my life to this. Cause yeah. like, I will try anything. I never also had that like fear or like line of like, this is worse than this or this. Like, I was like, who cares? Like, so I was like I said, all in and all of it. And when like I look back, of course, it took me a long time to admit that I was an alcoholic or had a problem. But like when I look back from the second I started doing anything, I had that preoccupation that was abnormal. And I didn't realize it. I didn't realize that, like, if you were looking at me, obviously someone else would have been like, oh yeah, she's clearly has a problem. Right. She's unable to do anything. I can't have a job. I can't go to school. I can't, like, nothing. But to me, like, it felt like what I wanted to be doing. So that was hard for me. So the first time, so I went to detox. I was able to complete-ish. Not actually, I didn't really complete. I think
this was at 15.
Yes.
Okay.
So,
but yet your parents still let you kind of move out at 16.
Yeah. That was also like under the, not direction of a psychiatrist, but like, we're just trying anything here. And okay. I am holding the family hostage. I am a terrorist. I am volatile. I'm stealing all their money. I'm stealing all their shit. Like, and it was just like, you guys are awful. Like, I got to get away from you. I got this psychiatrist on board with me that they're awful because they can present as like kind of awful. And so, so that happened, which was just, it was a disaster. So by the time I'm 17, I'm in Hazelden. And that was also a dud. I wasn't ready. Like, I mean, I don't, it's hard.
The one in Minnesota, I guess.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Their adolescent center there. Completed that and relapsed in the parking lot. They let a girl who I was in treatment with pick me up, and she did with drugs. And I was like, awesome. Like,
yeah.
That's great. Went back to Alabama, floundered more, got like a high school equivalent. It wasn't equivalent. It was actually a high school diploma, uh-huh. Basically paid for it. Enrolled in like a junior college, still just floundering. And at that point, a new medication had come to market called Suboxone. Mm-hmm. And everyone in my life was just done with, well, first of all, my insurance benefits had run out, because back then they had like, you had like a lifetime mental health insurance benefit, which is like funny because mental health disorders are chronic conditions generally.
Right.
But that's how, like, before, you know, we have Obamacare and stuff now, like that you could just have limits on your mental health. So I had run through my insurance benefits. So they were like, you need to get on this medication. You're going to kill yourself. Like, you are a psychopath. And I was. Mm-hmm. So
what year is this? I'm just curious, because I'm thinking this of is the like whole like 18, Purdue Pharma dope sick.
So when I'm 18, it was okay. New.
Oh, it was new. Okay.
Yeah. It was like right when it came to market, and it was like, here, do this. And I did it. And I remember I tried to get high for a couple days and realized like, oh, I'm not sick.
We're trying to get high from the Suboxone?
No, on top of it.
On top.
So this is another thing about my Suboxone journey. I'm sure someone told me somewhere along the line, like, you aren't supposed to drink and use drugs on Suboxone. I never internalized that message. I didn't know that was a thing.
Right.
I just thought this is
right.
This
course.
Is just an adjunct, you know, like, this is just something I take. So that's how I used it. And I just knew that like once a month I had to pass a drug test. I figured as long as that could happen, I could do whatever. Like,
right.
I just didn't hear it. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. So also, like, by this point, I had been introduced to meetings. Like, I found a boyfriend in a meeting. We just like make out at our NA meetings. Like, it was.
I mean, isn't that what you do at meetings?
It was a whole mess. It was like a whole just like
yeah.
Absolute. I thought getting sober was just so radical. Meanwhile, I didn't think that the way I was living was that radical, but I thought it was something, like, I never took it seriously. Like, I knew some people over here in some magical land actually got sober, but that literally was never going to be an option for, like,
right.
It just seemed so weird.
Right.
Like, crazy.
Totally.
And, like, so I get on the Suboxone, and my life gets, like, marginally better. I'm still a hot mess, but, like, compared to the in and out, like, craziness, like, I was so like unhinged that I remember one time I had a drug deal. I was basically in psychosis. He's like from the hood, you know, he's like right. Some gang banger who's like 50, has like, he's an amputee from getting shot. He's like, you need to go get help. like if you're telling me this, like, I was just like, that was the picture. I was a mess. So from that, I felt like I was doing good, you know,
right.
Like, this was, I was finally getting some ground under my feet. I convinced my family to let me move to Florida.
And this was a year taking Suboxone.
Yep, taking Suboxone and drinking. Yeah, I'm mostly just drinking. So
okay.
That started the slower progression
okay.
of alcohol.
Okay,
that I
got
had.
It.
Mostly just drinking. Because I also, at that point, like, I was beat down. Like, I was getting robbed a lot. Like, you know, like, I was tired. And so I was really like ready to be out mm-hmm. of like that environment.
Mm-hmm.
So getting on the Suboxone, I was like, I'm just going to be normal and drink like a lady. And, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, I did it for a little bit. Like.
Till it. You
a
did
little,
it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I get it.
So. It's funny though. Like, I used to believe those stories, but now when I look back, I'm like, I never did it great, but like, I thought I was.
Well, probably compared to
yes.
what it looked like,
mm-hmm.
you know, it looked great.
Yeah.
You weren't getting robbed.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, it was
no
working.
One was sending me to treatment. Like, and that for the longest time was my baseline of like, if I'm okay, it's like, are other people trying to send me to treatment? And as long as I didn't have that going on, I felt okay.
Right. That makes sense.
So I convinced them to send me to Florida and go to college,
mm-hmm.
Moved to Davie, Nova Southeastern.
Okay.
And again, I was still just like a full a full mess. I remember I got the weird thing that happened too when I got put on Suboxone. I was instantly thrown into being like an untreated alcoholic because I didn't have any like recovery, nothing. I didn't have any, I had zero skills of just how to cope. So I started again doing weird shit. Like I became afraid to drive on the interstate. I became afraid of airplanes. I became borderline.
So you have untreated anxiety, basically. Yes. Like generalized anxiety disorder. Right.
Raging. Started self-harming because just instinctually, like it was doing something like, oh, this is doing something.
Making you feel something.
And like also what I internalized, because I had such a distaste for the idea of like sobriety or treatment or anything like that, was like, I knew if I was doing weird shit, like I can't tell anybody, because the second I tell somebody, they're sending my ass to treatment and I don't want to go there. So right. It was just like this whole like alone, depressed, anxious, but I did it. And I was like, now I look back, I'm like, I was just so young. Like I just didn't know any better that like that wasn't life, you know? Mm-hmm. But so I go to South Florida, I meet people, going out to bars, I'm going out, like I live in Davie, so I'm like going to the Hard Rock every night. And there is a time that's like actually exciting. It felt like, okay, I can get super drunk and no one's getting mad at me. I can like do these club drugs, no one's getting mad at me. I still, you know, at home by myself was not well, you know? But I was going to school, I was completing school, like it was fine. And I did that for about 7 years. And during that like 7 years, I had spurts of like, I had like a meth problem for a little bit, but reeled it back in. Like, right. I like, you know, I just have like little here's and there's of issues, but it was nothing like I was able to get it back on track.
So it's like, I don't have a problem.
Yes. So I used to even say things like, I beat addiction. I used to be this drug addict when I was a kid and now I'm not. Meanwhile, I'm probably shit-faced drunk saying this. Like, you know, just, I was.
I shouldn't be laughing, but we have to laugh. Yes,
of course. Like it's funny. I'm sure people rolled their eyes when I would talk about just like, oh, I conquered that, like that, you know.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm taking a medication that like would put, you know, a sober person like on their ass for 3 days just so I can get out of bed, you know? Yeah. Like,
I know a lot of people who like use Suboxone to wean off of opiates, but like at that time, did they really believe that like long-term Suboxone use was the only answer? Or was that just like, it was working for you, so that was your answer.
I feel like that. I think there was not, because I used to kind of ask my doctor, like, when am I going to get off this? And you know, be like, oh yeah, when you're ready, like, we'll just do it slow. And I just kept kind of kicking the can down the road, and it just years just started to add up that like that's.
I feel like what I'd be like, doing. Never. It's making me feel good.
Well, and then, but a weird thing happened. Again, so much shame that like I wasn't like, it was definitely eating my soul somewhere because I didn't want to be dependent on it.
Right.
But I could not get off it. There was a couple times, I remember one time I did lock myself in my apartment, and like, it was when Marley and Me was that like super popular book. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, of course.
And I just went into like full blown withdrawal. I was reading that book, crying, just like locked myself in my apartment, said I had the flu, tried to get off of it. Within a week, I'm back on it. Like it was just, I tried that like a couple times, of course, not telling anybody what I was doing. And just always, I would say probably like year three or four, I settled in that like, this is it. Like, I'm not going to cause myself the stress of trying to like get off of it. And I did this other thing where I just internalized that I wasn't on it. Like if I had to fill out like medical paperwork,
you would just didn't put it down.
Didn't put it down.
Right.
Like, I don't know what that was happening in my brain, but it's like, if I just pretend I don't take it, then
no one know.
Then I just, it doesn't exist. You know? Absolutely. I did that. Lived in South Florida, created like kind of a life, just floundered, graduated college. And instead of doing anything with it, I was like, I'm going to go work at the mall. Like,
yeah,
you know, like, cause that's just what we do. Like, we just don't, you know, meet right. our potential. We don't.
Oh, I know. It kills me sometimes thinking about just like all the missed opportunities and everything. But obviously we don't, I don't live, try not to live in regret, right? Like just moving yeah. forward, but it sucks. Like I could have done so much more, you know?
Well, it's funny is like my, I guess that ego, that like thing that pushes back would be like, I just want to take a year off because I just got through college and I deserve, you know, just right. excuses, just right. like of why I'm not living.
The backpacking meanwhile, through Europe.
And I met my boyfriend. He was a customer, came in, started dating, fell madly in love. This point, he thinks I'm just normal, okay? Because I... I'm a liar.
Is that normal?
I'm just a liar. He just he thinks I'm just a drinker and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, just a normal, fun. Okay. So he had been sober at that point okay. for a few years. And it kind of asked me here and there, like, I think I probably dropped that line. Like, oh, I was a drug addict when I was a teenager.
Got it.
And now I'm healed, you know? So he had been through like, you know, my husband, right? He had been through.
Oh,
like,
is that him? Is yeah. this him?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So okay. I don't actually know him by face. Like oh, really? I only know his name and have seen him in the shadows at your place.
That's
like,
so funny. But yeah, so at this point, he had been to treatment.
Like grabbing the dogs.
30 times, you know? So like,
okay.
something's not quite adding up, but again, it's
he's probably
new
like, what
and it's
is
hot and we love each other. Like, it's just fun, you know? And so he's kind of just being like, maybe she did it. I don't know. And then, but he would hear about like what type of addict I was. So he knew somewhere in the back of his head, like something's must not have, yeah. adding up. But still, it's too early for him to do anything, right? So... I don't know, 4, 5, 6 months in, he just asked me point blank. He was like, are you on maintenance? He said I looked like dead when I was sleeping, and that's what he thought. And I was like...
You were doing the...
Yeah, and so I don't know why, but I came clean. I was like, yeah. I was like, but I'll get off for you because I love you. You know, like yeah. just insane.
Yeah.
But up into... It's funny because up until that point, I am not a lover. And he's kind of the same way. Like... Anyone I dated is, I tolerated them. I didn't have love for people. It was more like they broke me down. And so something, I do think it was like God working. It's like made me willing, you know. I was like, I'll get off of it. I'll go to detox. Meanwhile, I've been on Suboxone for 7 years. I don't know why I think I was just going to go to detox for 5 days and
yeah,
then
I don't
go
think
back
that's
to drinking.
How it works.
And he was very, I don't know if it was strategic or just not pushy where I was like, yeah, I'm not quitting like the other stuff I do, like the drinking and the Adderall, whatever, the Ambien, like I'm not quitting that. Like but I'll get off the Suboxone cause that's bad. Right. Opiates are bad. So.
Right.
And I somehow convinced, even though I had knowledge from like treatment and meetings, I had really done a good job of getting that knowledge out of my brain.
That's pretty incredible. But yeah. my question is, you were not abusing the other stuff or were
yes,
you?
Yes, totally.
Okay, because I was taking like 20 Adderall a day and 2 or 3 Ambien at night. So I'm just like, how?
The Suboxone did something to me.
Okay.
Where I was absolutely mm-hmm. able to manage better. Again, if you're a clinician diagnosing me and you're looking at my Adderall use, am I still meeting abuse criteria for it?
Probably. Yes. Okay, 100%. But not like what my...
I'm getting a prescription and it's done the first week and then the next 3 weeks I don't have it. You like that
okay,
type of
got
thing.
It, got it.
But
it's better than
yes.
what mine looked like, let's yes. say. Okay, got it.
Yeah, so for some reason, like the... I don't know if it was the Suboxone. It was definitely
maybe
it was part of the
close
Suboxone.
A receptor somewhere. I'm yeah. sure there is
absolutely
some sort of. I mean,
yes,
yeah,
yeah. No, it absolutely quiets those circuits.
Like GLP-1 medications, sure. they're finding quiet those circuits.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. So it again, it didn't raise me to a level of good functioning, but it raised me to a level of like good enough functioning,
mm-hmm. Got it.
Which is why it was able to sustain for 7 years. So it's like, you could like philosophically go back and forth, like what's worse, you know, basically kind of kept in this like purgatory of like, you're never going to be great. You're never going to be fulfilled, but you're not going to be bad enough to change. Right. Like, so that's where I was. And
I
so,
get that.
So I think I was stirring up some shit in I show up to detox and they're like, okay. And again, this was 11 and a half years ago. So they don't have as much knowledge even as they do now of how to do this. But they're like, we're going to put you on basically quadruple what I had been taking, cut you down to half of that, that cuts you down to your regular dose, cut you down, to half of that. And then one day of observation and you're done. And I look at the nurses like, do you understand like how sick I'm going to be if you do that? Like, that's not,
so you're not, you knew you had a little bit of,
I think my parents being medical and I'm everyone calls me like Dr. Goldman. Like I'm a at home. Yeah. So I'm knowledgeable about all things like withdrawal, detox. And I always like to say too, like I was using so long ago that like I went through withdrawal without like I knew all of the ways to do all this. Cause I was in that cycle when I was younger. So I get there and I freak out. And I remember the nurse being like, no, but you're going to take it at the same time every day. I said, do you think I fucking missed a dose? Like, do you think I'm like not taking it at the same time every day? Like,
yeah.
So, and they were just like, they just
thought you could do that in 5 days, seven years.
And basically, no. And they were upping my dose to drop me down. So the last 2 days were going to be half of what I normally took, which is still a tremendously high dose. And then the next day was an observation and then I'm out the door. I was like, you realize you're going to be sending me out the door like really fucking sick. You know?
Oh my God.
My boyfriend is arranging an intervention with me and my family.
Oh no.
So they show up. I think I'm heading home. I see my dad and this is not my first rodeo. I'm just like, fucking hell. Like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Like, I'm done with this relationship with you. I'm done. Like, I'm done, you know?
See ya.
But I had no leverage because I was a mess. I still financially didn't support myself. I still like, I had.
What do you mean your mall job didn't support you?
Exactly. My mall job didn't pay all the bills that I probably didn't even work full time. Like, you know, like.
Right. Of course. So, of course. And I'm joking. I shouldn't.
No, you should. But because in my mind, I'm this smart, independent woman.
Right.
No, I'm not.
Right. Well, that's why I said.
I'm getting an allowance. Like, and I'm in my mid-20s. Like, you know, so. So I have to agree. So I remember I screamed and I was like, give me a Boxone for the road, and which is like so against anything they're allowed to do. But they like made it happen and they were like, get the fuck out of here. You are so like wild. Okay. So I go, I'm being sent to New Hampshire to the Plymouth House. If anyone's
familiar,
of course,
I know the point.
Which at the time was a bed and breakfast is what they were zoned for. And I know all this. Like, I know that I'm
about...
Oh,
so you knew all that at the time?
I knew it wasn't a medical facility. So I knew I'm being sent to the woods and am about to go into full-blown withdrawal of 7 years of Suboxone. Because I wasn't in withdrawal yet. They'd been giving me medication.
And if that was like a 12-step house at the time,
yes.
Right?
Yep. It was just it was like a 12-step boot camp.
Yeah.
And... So I show up there and I had been on this so long. It took me a solid like 24, maybe even 36 hours from my last dose to even go into withdrawal. And when it hit, it was unlike any withdrawal like I had ever experienced. I was sweating profusely. I didn't sleep. Like my whole body was just like, it was just shot. Like it was so bad. I went blind like a week or so into it in one of my eyes. And no one was letting me go to the hospital, which like looking back, it's just wild how all, cause like none of this would fly today of how this went down. But like my husband's sponsor was the person who owned it at the time. And they're like, you're going to have to sit through this. They got my family on board to be like, no. You're
that's
gonna
what they
sit
did.
Through it.
The, I've seen them do that to someone before there was the knowledge, right?
Yeah.
And it's like horrific.
Horrific. It was an exorcism of unbelievable proportions. Like it was so bad. I wasn't allowed to miss groups. Like it was borderline cruel. I do believe at this juncture, there's no way I would have gotten sober if that wasn't what was happening. So like Now I can say like, I'm okay. But I was sick for about 2 years. It was not good, but I remember, so it was a 12-step boot camp and like 12-step hardcore where it's like, you are going to burn off everything that you identify as yourself and, you know, devote to a path of God if you want to get better. If you don't, like, see ya, you know? And I remember it was after I'd gone blind, but my vision had come back and like, I was just sitting in a group and I was like, fuck, like, I think I got the first step. Like, I do know. I knew that, like, if I went out and I started using, whether it was drinking or any other drugs, that I would eventually end up back on opiates.
Right.
I knew that. So, like, I had my first step down. I was, like, listening to the people in groups sharing, like, the speakers, you know, the staff. Mm-hmm. And, like, the way they talked about how they got high, and I was like, okay, they're actually the real deal, and they actually are recovered now. You can see it, you know, you can, especially when you're early in sobriety, you can see people's eyes. It's totally. Like, do they have it or do they not have it? They had it. They were clear.
Yep.
They had it. And so I was like, okay, I don't know if I want this for myself, but I do believe that they did it, like that they somehow right. got past this. And then third step, again, I wasn't sure I wanted to be sober, but I was like, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to give it a shot. So I took a third step, but I wasn't going to tell anybody that I was going to give it a shot because I don't like to commit like that. Like I just like to, because it's also like,
assess the situation.
Yeah. But it's also like horrifying when it's like, what if I give it a shot and it still doesn't work? You know, like what if
that
happens?
What's wrong with me?
So...
But I think also this like sounds like really like they're shaming you into these steps, which.
No, they weren't. They weren't shaming me into the steps, like, because they were just presenting the big book. They were just literally reading the book.
Okay.
All of it was, they knew I was all in this horrific withdrawal because you could see it. I was like gray. I was sweating. Like I was shaking. Like everyone knew I was in this, you know, knew the spot I was in, and I wasn't sleeping. So, but it was just that like internal shit where it was like, how did I think I was better? How did I think I was recovered? And this is where I'm at. It was like that existential crisis of like, how the fuck did I get here again? Like cause I kind of believed like if everyone would leave me alone, if everybody would just like stop trying to send me to treatment, I will fucking handle this. Like, just leave me alone.
Yeah.
And they left me alone. They left me alone for 7-8 years and I still wound up there. So I was pissed.
You had to think like, okay.
I just had to think, and I was so sick. I was like, I don't ever want to feel this again. And I'm like the youngest I'm ever going to be doing this. So like, maybe I give it a shot. Like I'm not committing. Cause again, being sober is
like, you're halfway there.
Weird.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I'm not sure. Like, I'm not like, oh, I can't wait to live a life without drugs and alcohol. Like, no, that was my whole personality. Like I wasn't, but I did know, like they hammered this home to me that like, if you're going to do the steps, they have to be honest, open-minded and willing. So even though I wasn't committed to long-term sobriety, I was committed to doing the steps in a wholehearted way while not using while I'm doing the steps.
Right. Okay.
And it's like, if I get better at the end of the steps, great. If I don't, great. I was, again, a full mess. But there was some hope instilled in me where it was like, oh, there is actually a different way to do this thing called life. Because then, you know, we got into the fourth step and it was just so abundantly clear, like from birth, my relationships have been shit. I didn't know how to manage my emotions. Like I was a taker. Like I didn't do anything that wasn't wildly selfish. And again, who knows if I would have had different insight if I got sober in my 30s, if I had like been able to learn. But where I was at, my fourth step was eye-opening, where it was like, how do I even have friends? Like how? I'm awful. Like I suck. I would not want to be my friend. So it's like I wrote my fourth step, read my fifth step, came back to Florida. They do it like, so when I left, I was on my amends. I went to Florida. I'm still sick. Like I was sick for 2 years. I wasn't sleeping. I gained a bunch of weight, a ton, 30 yeah. pounds in 30 days. Like my underwear wouldn't fit. So I was uncomfortable in my body. I was embarrassed. I was, so like you asked at the beginning, like, what was it like? Like early sobriety for me was so awful. Like it felt, I always describe it as like being boiled alive. That's what it felt like to me because I had to go back. I was no longer fun. I wasn't going out. I was in this body that I didn't feel comfortable in. I still felt like shit. I still had my shitty job. Like I still, like everything was bad. And I also had this like deep knowledge of like, if I go back out, I just start the clock over. Best case scenario, I'm starting the clock over. And I was like, I just have to
keep going,
sit in this. Yeah, and keep going and keep going. So I went to, I think it was the Monday meeting, the noon women's meeting. And this girl shared, and I remember they told me before I left the Plymouth House, like, get someone who's your sponsor who talks about actually working steps. Like, it can't just be someone who's like, well, they're talking about like the action of steps. So she talked about making amends and what it felt like. And I was like, she'll do. And, you know, so God, she was younger than me. And yeah, she definitely.
Which doesn't matter, really.
And I love her so much. She's not as bad of a drug addict as me.
But is she like, still your sponsor?
Yeah, yeah,
I love that.
She is. And she's a therapist. And like, she went through like therapy school as she was my sponsor. So like, she definitely like tests it out. But she's like, she's so sweet. Like she's validating. She's anytime I'm coming to her, like thinking I did something fucked up. She's like, okay. She was like, how do you feel about like it? Like, yeah.
And I'm like, oh I my like God, that.
So I start like, I get out, I start making them and I just start grinding. I just start doing it. Like at this point I go back to school to be a certified addictions professional.
Okay.
So I'm working a little bit in the field in detox and stuff. Still not entirely sure I want to be sober, but right. I am. And also, it was drilled into my head that like your life now is of service to other alcoholics. And if you want to maintain sobriety and have recovery, that's what you're going to do. So yeah. In the beginning, I got very lucky. I had a ton of sponsees, like just tons, and took a ton of people through the step. I was active. And it was funny because my husband, because I'd verbalized to him, like, I am not sure I want to be sober. He's like, well, you do a lot of things for, like, someone who doesn't. And really, I feel like the steps taught me just a different way to live. And again, like, trust, have faith that you do the right thing and then things are going to work out as they're supposed to. Yeah. Like, everything's happening for you, not to you. Like those types of things. Like, it really taught me. And so I just kind of did the deal. I ended up maybe 4 or 5 years sober. I got pregnant. And I haven't always been like gung-ho in AA through my entire sobriety.
Do you work in the field now?
Yeah. So now I work in the field. I don't work a lot because my kids are 8 and 4 and I teach fitness classes just for like a fun creative outlet. But right now I pull out like parents that are in like, they're like in PHP level of care.
Which is
Partial hospitalization. It just means that they do about 8 hours of like clinical services a week and then like sleep somewhere else. Like they're not in the building.
Got it.
And it's just, it's a level of care that people stay like 6 to 8 weeks in. So it's like an okay chunk of time that I get with people. And my like passions with that, like we talk about like generational trauma, like I had people do family trees, just we talk about family systems. We talk about guilt and shame. We talk like all those kinds of things. We talk about attachment styles and how that's playing out with their kids and how it played out in their family of origin. Like, I love it. I love it. It's great. I'm sure when my kids are a little bit older, I'll probably do more of it. Like,
I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I have a lot of like interest these days and it's like figuring out how to like
navigate
and balance it all, which is funny because I like my entire life it was I'm not passionate about anything, I'm not interested in anything, I hate everything, like let me just get high. And now it's
the opposite.
It's the opposite. Like I have too much stuff I want to do and it's just like not enough time to do it. So
but I do have one last question. So I ask everyone before finishing the podcast, so you know that now is the end of the podcast, but basically I'll say like, if you could tell your younger self something. And it doesn't have to be like your 5-year-old self. It could be your 15-year-old self. Any age you want. What age would you choose and what would you tell young Kate?
Oh my God. I feel like I need so much more time to think about the answer to that. You know, but maybe I'd hit that like early adolescent that was just such a mess and maybe just tell her like there's a way out, like,
yeah,
or that it's not all your fault, but it's like that's kind of like a platitude. But that age feels right where just things are, we're so insane,
yeah,
and it just didn't seem like there was any solution, you know,
right. So. Thank you. Thank you so much. You're amazing, really.
So are you.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you. That's it. We can hug.
Thanks for having me. Let's hug. Okay.